We have a really fun show today, right, Dave Miranda?
We sure do. I'm glad you made it. It was like you running to third base, making it to the studio today. Whoom!
My head is spinning. I still have paint on my hands. We just finished shooting a scene from our TV show, Downtown Chabby. That's going to be airing on FYI Network October 15th. And literally working nonstop, 7 days a week, all day.
You're definitely going to need a vacation in a few months, Frank, because I don't know how you do it. Honestly, I don't know how you do it doing the radio show, your shootings, your traveling, your family. I don't know how you do it.
I'm not necessarily in that order, but definitely shooting these days. The TV show is taking high priority just because we're coming to the end. We have like literally 3 weeks left of shooting the show. And then it goes into, right now it's literally editing on the fly. So our first show debuts October 15th, 8 p.m. And then after every week after that, every Saturday night, boom, primetime, boom, 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 up until the 8 weeks.
You guys already showed the third house, right?
We revealed the third house, which when we say revealed, not for the viewing public just yet. But
for the shooting.
But for the shoot, our shooting purposes, yeah, we've revealed three houses. We have five more to go, and they're all queued up. Some, you know, need a little more work. We're getting them there, but we have a probably by next week. We're going to take a little breather and then kick back up, and then we'll just start rocking them out left one after the other.
I actually found the promo. I'm going to put it on the WGN radio.
Yeah, it's really fun. They've been the network FYI has been releasing a lot of these teaser videos, and if you haven't seen them, you can go to my Facebook page at Frank Fontana Design or Instagram or even FYI Television. Right now, Dave's going to post it on WGN.
And it's you and your wife doing
my wife, Sherry, team
here.
Yeah, yeah, we're the dynamic duo of home renovation these days, I guess. And then we were tackling these old homes. We make over 100-year-old homes and older in some cases, and get in there. We get our hands dirty with our team. We have our construction partners and ourselves, and it's a big show, man.
So for those of you that think that Frank Fontana has a glamorous job...
you're kidding yourself.
Wait till you see his hands all painted up
you're
and his clothes all dirty.
It's the old adage. You know, people say that Hollywood's glamorous. It's...
Right.
In this version of Hollywood, it is not glamorous. It is down and dirty.
Yes.
I mean, you never know what you find when you peel back the walls of a 100-year-old home.
What's the weirdest thing you have found, Frank, behind there?
Thus far...
Any bodies yet? Ooh, no.
There what? We found Al Capone's shoe. One home.
Hey.
I'm kidding. We
didn't that's news content right there.
No, but we did find in this home in Evanston, we found a giant steel industrial pole that looks like it could support one of these high-rise buildings. Now, it definitely could support one of these high-rise buildings, hidden in a wall, holding up three stories of something that I cannot reveal.
But you will reveal it in the show.
In the show. You'll have to tune in to find out. But, the things we find are crazy. We found fire damage, like extensive fire damage in another home to the point where it caused some real-world problems that with the home and the homeowners and the previous owners. I mean, it's anybody who's ever lived through a renovation knows that just that alone is a headache. But to find things, the unforeseen, is the scariest thing in the world.
I love it because even if you're not into interior design or you're not going to do interior design in your home, these are interesting topics and interesting facts that
it's
we
life,
can
man.
Yeah,
you know, it's really what this show's all about. It's uncovering the things in life that you know you're laying around the corner or ideas and subjects that pique the interest of people living under that roof. You know, I mean, how many people have heard of knob and tube wiring? You know what that is?
No.
So that was the preferred method of wiring a home back in the early, you know, late 1800s into the early 1900s, and basically what that was is a cloth wrapping around an electrical wire, and they would connect it to a porcelain hub and then distribute that electricity throughout the rest of the home. Well, you know, they come to find out, like, 100 years later, that that's probably not the best idea to use cloth around wires because eventually that will cause a fire. And these are the things we're discovering on this show is that, and by law now, if you open up a wall and there is knob and tube wiring exposed, you have to replace the entire thing. So
our fines would be.
Oh,
waiting
at
your door.
They'd shut down your project. So, I mean, we're everything we do on this TV show is all 100% legitimately real. These are real contracts, real homeowners, real issues. Nothing is contrived. Nothing is fake. It's just the real world of construction and renovation, you know. And the beauty of this is it's most of the times a happy ending.
We have to organize a viewing party for the 15th, Frank.
You know, my wife and I were just talking about that. Like, do we just don't do anything and just run and disappear for, you know, a month and shut our phones off and turn our computers down and not talk to anybody? Or do we throw a huge party and continue the madness? Dave, you're looking like you want to throw a huge party.
Yes, let's party. I like the party idea.
Why don't you throw it for us, man?
Okay. All right. Let's organize something like that.
Yeah.
You know, have a little wine, a little beer. Just
how about a lot of wine and a lot of beer?
You look like you need some, Frank.
I do. Well, and we're going to have some towards the end of our show. We're going to be tasting some Czech beer and Czech wine, right? Because we're talking about the big Hobie Day parade.
Yes, right? It's going to take place October 2nd.
Yeah, the Czech Republic minister was just in town, right?
Mm-hmm.
To help launch this off. And we're going to be finding out more about this parade and also about the architecture and design of the Czech culture. Very interesting.
Yes, and they have similarities. It's all either squared or it's a rectangular.
A lot of farmhouse A-frame peaks that they do, but they're so unusually high, these peaks, that I can't wait to talk to the folks who organize the parade, and hopefully maybe they can kind of shed some light on the culture and why is this the case. You know, I mean, I geek out on little things like this. Like, why is their peak bigger than our peak?
And you know what? We could probably pick the brains of the College of DuPage students that are going to be visiting
us.
That's
right.
Well.
I'm excited about this. We're going to be talking to a few of the students and lead designers from College of DuPage Interior Design Degree Program. Jane Kielb is joining us. She's the assistant professor, along with a bunch of students. Amazing group of people. Sherry Bolton, actually, is one of the students who made it into the White House to help decorate the White House, which is awesome. You know, I mean, think about that. I one year I did this in this article for the Tribune. They called me up. They said, hey, you know, the Obamas just take over the White House, and if you were hired as their designer, how would you do the Red Room? So I had to render up my version of what I would do for the Obamas in the Red Room, and it made it into a full color spread on the Tribune, and it was awesome. They never use it, to my knowledge, but
I'm sure the Obamas are more about giving opportunity to the up and coming all the time, like the barbers and the chefs and every like the up and coming.
So
they want to give
me,
opportunities.
They were like, you're
too professional, you're too known.
Yeah, darn it.
You were already on HGTV, so there must have been like, nah, we need somebody that needs the exposure.
This is true. This is true. It makes me feel better now. Thank you. Thank you. And then still Baby Safety Month, and we'll be talking to Alan Covello of Tad Green Industries, and they have some really cool safety products and cleaning products for kids. And if you have babies, that's a good segment to listen into. There's always chock full of tips as we round out this Baby Safety Month. So it's going to be a fun show. And we're broadcasting right now live on Facebook. If you go over to my Facebook page at Frank Fontana Design, punch that in, you can watch this show live on the internet as we speak.
So thanks to technology, this is going to become a TV show for today. Even though with the watch button, you can also watch it every single weekend, but now it's in more detail.
Yeah, and if you're just surfing around Facebook and you happen to stumble onto my page, boom, it's like live television happening as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so post on our Facebook page, whether on WGN or on Facebook, Frank Fontana Designs. Let us know if you're watching on the internet.
Maybe some questions for our guests as well.
We'll take the questions. We'll take it all. And we're about to unload on the topic of interior design. Whether you aspire to be one, aspire to hire one, this should be a good conversation. Because I have a lot of folks sitting in front of me right now that are all very experienced, have come through the school of College of DuPage Interior Design Program. And to kick it off, joining me is the assistant professor, Jane Kielb. How are you, Jane?
Okay.
Thanks for coming in.
Well, we are very happy to be here.
Yeah, we got a full house. And by the way, broadcasting live on Facebook right now. Say hi to everybody. Say hi, Mom. There you go. So, Jane, did you start out as an interior designer first? Or, like, tell me your story.
Well, I always knew that this was what I wanted to do from the time I was a little girl playing with Barbies and all the other little girls. Long time ago, would be dressing up their dolls and doing all sorts of things. And I made everybody's Barbie house. And so I just,
to scale, though?
Close to it. It fit the Barbies.
Well, there you go.
And so I always knew that's what I was going to do. And I got a bachelor's degree in interior design and started doing offices for a number of years for a firm down here by the Merchandise Mart.
Nice.
And then did retail design for stores all over the Midwest. And that was really fun. And then life kind of catches up with you. I had a little three-year-old and twins and thought, I can't be traveling all over the Midwest anymore. And an opportunity came up at the College of DuPage to start teaching part-time, and started teaching all of the CAD programs, and that led into teaching lighting design and interior systems and details. And I did that for 7 years, and then about 14 or 15 years ago, I became the full-time teacher at COD. And now I'm the only full-time, teacher. But we have amazing part-time faculty, all working designers, fabulous designers, as all of these people here can tell you, the role that our part-time faculty made with their successes in competition and in the real world.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the stories.
Yeah.
So before we do that, though, tell me, in your opinion, what makes a great interior designer?
Oh, gosh. It's sort of, I think, half your design skills that most of us learn in school. And then the other half is just that work ethic, that seeing the things that you do, seeing projects
hustle
through to the end. Yeah. And really, design is like a puzzle. I'm a puzzler person. And it is though being able to follow up on all of the details, being able to sell your design. If you can come up with wonderful designs, but you can't sell it and make the client understand that you are doing the things, suggesting the things that's the best thing for them. To me, that's the best way to grow your business and be successful, is do the right thing for the client.
Yeah. And sometimes that takes not doing the right thing for yourself, right?
Correct. And in the long run, it ends up to be where I think the designer is more successful then.
Yeah, because your client is king.
It is. Yeah. That's definitely true.
So, I mean, for those who've never hired a designer, what should be some of the first things as a listener? And folks, feel free to chime in here, 312-981-7200, if you have any questions for Jane, myself, or any of the gals here in studio about working with interior designers, experience with interior designers, or if you're a budding interior designer who's thinking about going to school and want to learn more about the College of DuPage program, we'll be happy to talk to you about that. So if I'm like to engage you for the first time as a potential client of yours, what are some of the things I should know? What are some of the things that from the inside you would share with people to say, ask these five questions?
I normally, before I would ever meet with a client, I tell them to get their thoughts together first, make a list of their priorities, look for, sometimes what I think is a certain style is not what they think is a certain style. Okay. Pictures.
I'm going to play devil's advocate, right? As a client.
All right.
But I'm hiring you. Like, why should I do that?
Well, I can spend a lot of time looking up different options for you, but the meter is running.
Good answer.
And so at that point, if you could just put some thought into what you want, I can help guide you in the correct direction. And as long as the designer is actually listening to you and trying to incorporate your ideas, I've had clients before that want to get everybody else's opinion too. And you know what? The other people aren't working in those spaces. The other people aren't living in those spaces. We're designing this for you, and I won't let you do anything that isn't going to be a good design solution, but it might not be what that other person does, but don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Make this your space.
So first note is the experience of a designer and a client is a mutual experience.
It's not, and
I very rarely, and I don't know about any of you ladies, have had the experience where a client says, here's a check, go do what you do.
Yeah.
I don't think that scenario exists too often.
No.
I've had it happen, and it's a great experience.
It's like you can't believe it.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas. You can really, truly do what you've been hired to do.
Yeah.
But what I think is really important for people to understand that's listening who are interested in the world of design or considering hiring interior designers is that it is a dance. It is a collaboration. Even though you are hiring a designer, it is a partnership. There's no way we can fully, be inside somebody's head to grasp every nuance of what they want. And that's the second part to I would ask you is, what are the right questions to ask?
sometimes I think you don't talk about the money first. How much are your services going to charge? You don't want to have something come up later where there's a misunderstanding about what that's.
You're saying do talk money first or don't talk money?
Well, just make sure before the end of the conversation that.
So don't lead with the budget conversation.
Right. But get an idea of the scope of their project. Sometimes people are waving at
Sorry,
us.
That's my niece out there.
So. Oh. Sometimes, you know, they think that they've got a lot of money set aside for a project. I had someone one time say that they had $2,500 to work with, thinking that that was going to be just an exceptional amount of money. And then they start listing all the things that they want to accomplish, and it's like, that's a fraction of what something really going to cost.
Frank Fontana. Now let me glue that, and screw that. Any random show you got, well, I can do that.
Welcome back to the Frank Fontana Show. I got a laughing group of ladies in front of me. Dave, they're making fun of your intro song here that you made for me.
I see they like to dance as well. They like to have fun.
Why not? Right?
You can tell they're very creative.
Exactly.
In their moves as well.
That's how they do it at the College of DuPage, man. We're here with the Interior Design Degree Program folks here and some graduates as well as a student here. We have Jane Kielb, who's the assistant professor. Jane, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we're going to introduce our panel here. We have Allison Schutz.
Hi there.
I just said it and I screwed it up, didn't
I? Okay. It's all right. Schutz,
there it is. We have Sarah Venisek.
Yes, hello.
Nailed it. There you go. Sherry Bolton.
Hello.
Yeah, we get everybody's up. And just talk right into that microphone when your name comes up. And Mariela Sanchez.
Hello.
Who I had the pleasure of meeting yesterday during a shoot for our TV show over at Studio 41.
Studio 41.
Yeah, amazing place. If you haven't been there, shame on you. Studio 41 is, for me, one of the meccas of in our area for home design and cabinetry and plumbing and tile. It has everything.
Doors,
windows, you name it. Yeah, I'm a fan.
It's kind of like Six Flags. You can't see it all in one day.
You're so right. You really are so right. You could get stuck in the bathtub aisle for a day.
Definitely.
Especially when you get in them and you just kind of like, that's the way I do it. If I'm going to sell it, I got to feel it. What'd you say?
You don't go that far.
You don't go that far? You're missing out, let me tell you. All right, so Sherry, let's start with you. You came through the program. Now you are an assistant professor. Is that what you said?
I am.
And you had the privilege of having a really great experience at the White House, correct?
Yes, and great is an understatement.
Tell me about it.
Well, I graduated from the College of DuPage, and after reading the book from President Obama, The Audacity of Hope, I had the audacity to pick up the phone and call the White House, and I was hoping
they would call
me back.
You're just like, hi, this is Sherry. I'm just calling to see if you're looking for an interior designer for the White House. How does that work?
Absolutely. Just like that.
What was the message like? Was there a machine? It's like, hey,
I spoke with the
Brock.
Live person. Well, yeah, that would have been nice, but no, I spoke with the live person. I told them what my endeavors were. I asked them that I was interested in decorating for the Christmas holiday season, and I wanted them to take a look at my portfolio, and could they tell me what the process was?
What?
Yeah.
It's that easy, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
to get in. Yeah, but I'm sure
I can't believe they even take your call. Like, I can't believe there's somebody live. It's not like a machine that would just take people's calls.
You know what? You would be amazed at the number of volunteers that not only take calls, but write children back, write individuals back, give personal letters and invitations to the president and the first lady, and they do respond.
Wow. That's amazing. So you got in there, and what was it like to meet the Obamas? I mean, were they warm, welcoming, and did you get a chance to actually physically meet them? And
We did. I physically met Michelle Obama, and it was during the Paris bombings. Mm. We did see the president leave the White House, get on his helicopter, and get saluted. And go off into to Paris. But we did meet Michelle, and I did tell her, as I'm sure most Chicagoans, we wanted to know when she was coming back. And she said, I hope it's soon. I hope it's soon.
You think they're going to come back and live here when it's all said and done?
Well, they do have a home. So
they do have
maybe they can come and visit from time to time.
I think they'll visit. Yeah, exactly. Well, good for you. That's an amazing experience. She's a big HGTV fan, Michelle Obama.
Yes.
Yeah, we got to get her to be an FYI fan now.
Yes.
FYI, our new network. All right. All right, so let's talk to Allison.
Yes.
Tell me about it. You're graduating this year?
I'll be graduating this summer.
This summer?
Yes, I am in my last year of school, and I worked my way up to just having a few classes during the semester so I can have an internship during my last year, which I am I'm currently interning at a nice place in River North, and I'm learning a lot and loving it.
And what are you specializing in, commercial, residential, or kind
of? I would like to be specializing in commercial. Right now I'm interning at a residential because you can learn a bunch from both sectors and they can combine, especially the way commercial is working nowadays.
Yeah, commercial's fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Residential?
I mean, it's still good. There's lots of stuff out there.
Listen, it's all about... You know, I don't know about you girls, but finding, I think, is equally as important for the client to find the right designer. It is to have the designer find the right client.
Absolutely. Correct. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think those synergies are super important to have a great relationship, because when it doesn't go that way, it ain't pretty. Sarah.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Tell us your story.
So I graduated from College of DuPage in May. In my last semester, I was an intern at a hospitality design firm in the West Loop.
Oh, cool.
And subsequently was hired there, so now I'm full-time designing hotels and restaurants.
Isn't it fun? It's designed two restaurants, one in Wrigleyville and one in Andersonville, and I think it's one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
So out of the box. Mm-hmm. I like to push the envelope of design, and sometimes you don't get that luxury in residential. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to Mariella. Mariella, actually... Is an employee now of Studio 41, right?
Yes, I'm currently full-time at Studio 41. I was so I graduated in May from College of DuPage as well, and I was actually Studio 41's first intern.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, and, congratulations.
Thank you, and it worked out beautifully, I would say, for both of us. It's been a nice partnership. It's a great time to be with the company. They're growing.
They're an amazing group. And as a matter of fact, we have a caller with some questions about Studio 41. Hey, Gloria, thanks for calling the show.
Hi, I'm out in Orland Park, but I have a daughter and son-in-law in Glen Ellen. They will be doing a teardown of their home and building more or less a luxury home. And I was wondering, where is Studio 41?
So Studio 41 has several locations. There is one in Glenview.
Okay.
That could be good for you to...
Burr Ridge.
Burridge is kind of close too.
Naperville. There are,
and also, Naperville. Me and Virginie mentioned a place, and I don't know if I have it right. Have you heard of Lux Home Center, or is there something regarding TUB Home Center? I wrote it down, and I don't know the exact name now.
In the Merchandise Mart, there's a Lux Home, which is pretty much the whole first floor.
Right. That's what he also said, Merchandise Mart, yes.
But I would tell you this, and I'm not being biased, that the pricing is and options are probably a little better at Studio 41.
That's good to know.
Would you say would you say that's true?
That's true. Definitely something for everybody there.
Wonderful.
There's the high and, you know, there's the low. We do work with several accounts, build firms, contractors, what have you.
Yep.
So
and your website?
Definitely check out the website. The different locations are there. Call, make an appointment. That would be probably the best way.
What's the web address?
Shop
Studio 41. ShopStudio41.com, Gloria.
Okay, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you. Good luck with that.
Success on your project.
Yeah, definitely. And I just want to take a Facebook question coming in off our Facebook Live feed from Linda Daniels. She says, hi, I'm here in the South Suburbs, Frank. Do you use primer on kitchen cabinets or paint with primer? If you all want to chime in on this. Has anybody done this? I've done this 100 times. What say you?
Well, I work for Sherwin-Williams right now as a part-time, so I definitely get this question a lot going into homes and doing color consults. You want to make sure you sand those cabinets down. Just do a fine grain sanding bit because you don't want to ruin the grain of the wood. Make sure you go with the grain of the wood. Go lightly.
Would you recommend like 120 grit or something higher?
Well, just do it extra fine. You know, don't put too much muscle into it. And then you just kind of sand that down. Make sure you wipe it off. You don't want any sand grit in there. Then you prime it. And then depending upon your wood, if it's too grainy, you want to do an extra coat of primer so it can fill in the holes of the grain. And then you want to have that dry probably about 24 hours depending on your primer. Anybody at your local Sherwin-Williams can help you out. There's different types of primers for different woods and substrates. But after that, you can go ahead and paint that. Your specialty paint for cabinets. I know I use Pro Classic at Sherwin-Williams. That is for trim and doors. And it has a high leveling quality where it actually levels out. So you don't see those brush strokes like you would see, you know, doing it yourself with those sponge pieces. You just got to get the right brush and I think you have some beautiful cabinets that look professionally done.
Well, yes. Done. Good
one
answer.
One thing I will add with that is just make sure that you do have all wood cabinets, because if they're not, you're going to sand off laminate.
Yep.
So that's where priming with probably a good multi-purpose primer from Sherwin-Williams could do the trick for you, and then you can go in with the enamel.
Fantastic. Yes. Look, I don't even have to talk. You guys can do the show for me. This is awesome. I'm going to have you guys come in every Sunday for at least an hour. So, good question, Linda. I hope that helps.
It's not just home improvement. It's life improvement.
Oh, yeah. We try to improve your life one interior design at a time. We're in studio. Joining me are the team from College of DuPage Interior Design Program. I say team because we have all sorts of folks here. We have our assistant professor Jane Keel joining us. We have Allison, Sherry, Mariella, Sarah's all in studio, all students, former students. Now some work for the school. Others are going into their own programs. Some graduating this summer.
That's right.
Very exciting. Very exciting. We're just talking off mic about the world of interior design and how it could be funky sometimes. And, you know, a couple things that I'd love to talk about is value, you know, people's, you know, expectations and budgets. And then even also just valuing us as interior designers, you know, what we do is not a tangible thing. It's a service. And sometimes when somebody doesn't get handed a physical object in exchange for that dollar amount, there's a gray area that they feel they could take advantage of. How have been your experiences, Jane? And then we'll kind of kick it around the room with this topic.
Oh, boy. That is probably something that lots of design seminars and things for professionals happen, discussing just that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And lots of misunderstandings happen between client and designer because of that. Because everybody really does think that they can sort of know how to do it themselves anyway. And I guess it's just something that you have to value yourself at the very beginning. Decide what you're going to do. Don't walk into a client or a design situation without an idea of what your value is. I mean, I know Sherry and I have had that conversation many times as she was starting her business, and being able to ask for what you deserve and then giving them value for that. So they have to realize that what you are providing for them is something that they can't really get from anybody else.
And what is the going rate right now? I mean, what are you guys asking for? Do you do hourly? Do you do a per job? What percentage? How do you guys do your business?
Well, it really depends. I have a full service interior design firm, and it depends. Any good designer, their rates start at least $125 and go up from there. You can really consider at medium $150 an hour.
And on the high end?
On the high end, you're $175, $225, and then you're
I've heard numbers into luxury of $500 an hour.
Oh, yeah, you're luxury when you get to those numbers.
I mean, I'm at $1,000 an hour, but that's just because, you know.
Yeah.
I like to. No, I'm kidding. I don't. that would be nice if I could do that.
Really nice.
No, it would be. But I know there's just some big firms out there.
You.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, you might be real soon. I mean, I've seen some big companies out there that, you know, on the big corporate level that do charge ridiculous money or charge a guarantee $15,000 just to walk in their door and talk to them, you know, and if they pick up your project, then, you know, it's a big money thing.
Yeah.
You know, that is a luxury to be at that point.
Yeah. Well, design by itself, interior design is a luxury sector anyway. And
yes.
So you're dealing a lot of times when you're talking to customers, you're really educating customers on the value that you bring to a project. And so I always talk about how much time and how much money I am saving you. And my tagline is getting it right the first time. How many customers have tried projects on their own just to, when it's all said and done, stand back and say, I wish I could have did it this way. I wish I had bought. That's the value that interior designer brings to the table.
Yep. I agree. And it's never a bullseye every time, though. You know, I mean, you could try your darndest to get it right. I mean, there's always something that a client will come back and say, oh, but, you know, that fabric, you know, I don't know about that fabric, or, you know, that color. Like, can't we just tweak that color? Well, no, that was a custom color made for you specifically for that. You know, so you get that a lot. And it's like, you just got to kind of roll with that. And I think in the world of interior design, it's a little bit of, you know, got to be able to take a punch to give a punch. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that?
Mm-hmm.
or that doesn't work in your world? Maybe not. Okay.
Well, hopefully just, that doesn't happen very often.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, and what I mean by that, let me get deeper into that, is really, you know, it's a give and take is really what I'm talking about. You know, you could push an idea and we could have a notion as designers to say this. I know that this is going to look amazing in your home. And you might have to push them. And it's a struggle. And then at the end of the day, because they're hiring you for vision. Right?
Yes.
What they lack as a client is a vision of the final product. Because if not, everybody could do it. Yeah. You know, and I deal with this all the time on the TV show and in my real practice. People are always like, oh, yeah, like you said, I could do this. I could do this. But when it comes to the room being pulled together and they walk in and they're just like jaw hits the floor, that's the magic that, mm-hmm. that interior designers do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can say one thing that the College of DuPage is really, really good for, aside from just an excellent education, is they really are trendsetters and cutting edge when it comes to technology. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to 3D renderings, 3ds Max, Photoshop, SketchUp, Chief Architect, some of the students know some of all of those programs. And so as a designer, when I meet a customer that's really picayune about a project or they can't visualize it, then I go to plan B, which is give them more detail in a detailed drawing, which is part of the education that you receive at CAD,
sure.
which makes it really, really, really simple and easy for them to say, oh, now I see the color of those cabinets and ah, that hardware, that really does look nicely. Or that farmhouse sink, ah, I thought I wouldn't like it at first, but now I see it in the rendering and it looks beautiful. And so it really is an added benefit and
sure.
value to the
customer. Have the technology and then value. And with that, with concept renderings, how often are you, you know, because I think that's another gray area too, is when you see a rendering, it's like, oh, I want this exact thing. But then in reality, you realize budget and types of wood and type of things that are existing in a home change that and can get, so your target is this, is that rendering. You know, to get us there, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of things to get there. How do you manage those expectations? Because ultimately, you output, and I do this all the time. We have this most amazing 3D rendering, you know, team that I have, and it's like so photorealistic, but almost to a fault, because then there's huge expectations on that. And if you can't deliver that, then there's problems. Mm-hmm. You know, so A, it's really important that clients understand that they're conceptual, that these are moving yes. targets, you know. Mm-hmm. And B, the goal is to allow, if your budget can get you there, you know, this is the dream.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
yes.
Jane, professor, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think one of the things that make the computer-generated rendering so valuable is when you do run into some of those issues that something has to change, it's on the computer, and you can just...
tweak it. Yeah,
change out a material and say, here's what happened, here's where we're going to have to make a change, but look, it's still going to be beautiful, and
yep.
we have to work with what we've got, and we'll still have this wonderful space. In the old days when everything was done by hand, you were starting from scratch.
Remember the old watercolor drawings we used to do?
I mean, oh, yeah.
I miss those days.
Yeah. Well, it certainly because clients, for the most part, can't visualize what something is going to look like. We can get that picture in our head almost at the very beginning, but they can't see it. And with what you see on HGTV and everything is a three-dimensional rendering for clients, clients expect that now. They
yes.
just think it's something, oh, you push that button and you have that rendering. Well, it doesn't happen that way.
Oh, no.
But
it's hours and sometimes days of rendering
right.
and
right.
concept and
Many
development.
And, right.
Yeah, and you're right. And there needs to, you know, that has to be built into the conversation that and how valuable that is. Because I think people do get, you know, nowadays you can open up a screen and be like, oh, look, I'll go on Houzz. And that's, you know, it's almost the same thing. No, it's not. You know,
it's
a huge process. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in here. Got a real fun show going on here. Got the ladies of the College of DuPage joining us. A mixed bag of conversation here about the world of interior design. Joining us is Jane Keel, who's the assistant professor. We have Allison Schutz. Is that right? Am I not saying that right?
I'm just going to help you out. It's like he shuts the door.
Allison shuts the
there
door.
That's
and
right.
Sarah Benesek opens it. And we have Sherry Bolton and Mariela Sanchez, all graduates and soon to be graduate of the program at College of DuPage. And if you ever thought about being a part of College of DuPage, well, first, before I go there, stop what you're doing. Go on Facebook right now and watch us live right now, because we are doing a live stream on our Facebook page, Frank Fontana Design on Facebook. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
You can watch this show happening and unraveling as we speak. So Jane, tell us, you know, if somebody's out there listening, a son, daughter, you know, is interested in becoming an interior designer, how can they do it with the College of DuPage?
Well, one thing I want to say is we have a majority of students that are part of the program that are career changers. It's something they thought they wanted to do back when, and their parents at the time said, oh, I don't know, I think you should be something else. And they did.
You're a rock and roll singer.
Yeah. and so they come to us as career changers. First time I sat down with Sherry, who has her MBA, she wanted to come into the interior design world. So we wanted to put together a program that really gave people a career track. We are an associate's program, and we do have traditional age students in the program as well that can transfer to other schools and get a bachelor's degree. But since a lot of our students are adults, we sat down and said, what skills do these people need to work as an interior designer in the industry, and put together a program for that. So we have a career track, associate's degree. We also have certificates in kitchen and bath design, like Mariella is working in that now. We have a specialized CAD certificate and a lighting certificate. I'm the lighting teacher, so I really love lighting design. It's one thing that can make or break those
100%.
Projects.
100%. It is all about lighting.
And so we have a specialized lighting certificate as well that you were just holding up a poster. We just finished with a lighting show. Our advanced lighting class in the spring semester, not only did we do a very complex design project and plan the lighting for it, but each of the students made light fixtures. And the new president at College of DuPage saw them hanging up and wanted to bring them over to the main gallery. So for 3 weeks, they were on display, and we had a fabulous response to that. And so making light fixtures was a fun thing for us. And so I guess I just wanted to say, whether you're a traditional age student or looking at a different career, Mariella came out from Chicago, and we're in Glen Ellyn. We're out in the western suburbs.
So there's such a thing called a chargeback agreement that will enable you to attend College of DuPage if you live in the city and still pay that in-district student rate, since the city colleges do not offer an interior design program. Additionally, College of DuPage is one of the few schools that does offer the kitchen and bath certificate. Even Harrington didn't toward the end, which is one of the main reasons that drew me to College of DuPage. Really is a wonderful school.
Yeah, I mean, and what a huge sector of design. I mean, just specializing in kitchen and bath. It's its whole world.
And yesterday, we were just awarded an Excellence in Education Award for being one of the top 10 programs in the country in kitchen and bath design. So
that's awesome. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I just found out in a webinar yesterday that we had achieved that. So that just shows the quality of student that comes out of our program. And we do our best. We get involved with professional organizations, help students network. And that's where I you know, had met other design professionals in the industry, and do that to help connect students with potential jobs. And one of the reasons I said I would do that.
Good for you. And girls, let me ask you across the board here, where do you see the future of interior design? Well, let's start down the line here.
The future of interior design?
Yeah, like for you, Sarah, where do you see it going? Like, take a segment. Take you know, like, is there what tickles your fancy when it comes to, like, the thought of, wow, this could be awesome if, you know? And if you need some time to think about it, I can move on down to Allison. Allison, like, for you, like, what would you love to see come out of the world of interior design?
Well, it's really interesting you ask that, because most people, they say to me, well, you're an interior designer, so you're like, fluff pillows, right? And I just kind of give them this look of,
you throw a pillow at them.
Yeah, right? I'm like, I want to throw a pillow at you. So I describe it as interior architecture, because COD has taught me that we're a very technically focused school. So as I said before, I was going into commercial design. You're literally taking out the studs. You're going from the exterior wall to the inside. So I'm knowing a lot about the structure of the building. I'm not an architect. I don't know the weight bearing of everything.
Yeah, we do anything non-structural.
Yeah. So we are learning about the basis of the structure of a building and within a space, and what we can do with, you know, 1-hour walls and such. So there's a lot of things that we do need to know not just fluffing pillows. So there's a lot of technical aspects, and I believe the future of interior design is going to be involving more and more so that we become somebody that works just alongside with those top-notch architects that
and general contractors.
General contractors. Yeah. We know all that information just like they do. So
good for you. Well,
that's
set.
Where I see it going
stepping
forward.
Stepping up the profession. That's exactly. Stepping up the profession of interior design.
Exactly. It's stepping up a lot.
And Sherry, how about you?
Well, from a residential perspective, I really see that customers are still very much hands-on. And not only do they want that high-end look, but they want that high-end look at a moderate rate. Because you're talking about everyday people who mm-hmm. have college tuition and they have bills to pay. And so I see the industry giving customers and residential clients that high-end look without the high-end price tag. And I think customers in the future are going to love that.
Yeah, and technology is playing a big part
Absolutely.
In that.
Absolutely. Fabrics and technology all play a part in that.
I think you're seeing a lot of online services offering the typical design services. That's a good point. How about you, Mariela?
Well, I think it's booming. I think that companies such as Sherwin-Williams Studio 41 are kind of getting on board. They're hiring actual interior designers because we offer so much more than just selling a product. You need knowledge of space planning, knowledge of deconstruction, things like that. So I think that they're offering those services for free by hiring professionals. So they're able to offer, free in-home consultation or at a minimum cost, free kitchen and bath design, with purchase. So I think that other companies are getting in on the action as well.
And they're not
more of a value.
And it's not, you guys are qualified designers. So it's not like they're hiring somebody off the street and calling them a designer to work for a studio for one. They're qualified designers.
That's right.
Yeah. And we have a text coming in to just round out this segment here. Could Frank and his guests please address the recommendation they offer clients regarding when it is safe to move back in a home following new wood floors being installed? The product used was an oil-based treatment over. Thank you. My personal recommendation is 3 to 4 days. Mm-hmm. Would you guys concur with that?
Oil-based, you have to let that cure.
Yeah.
You don't want it to scratch. So especially it's oil-based and also the indoor air quality of your space, mm-hmm. you want to make sure that it's safe to go in. So I agree. 3 to 4 days. If you want to extend it to 6, then
the more the better.
Yes.
The harder it cures, the better it gets. I think that would be our collective recommendation from
keeping
the 8-4.
Keeping the temperature pretty moderate so that it does dry faster.
I think mm-hmm. somewhere in the ballpark of like 70 to 75 mm-hmm. Degrees. All right, cool. Ladies, this has been amazing. I appreciate y'all coming in.
Thanks for having us.
We'll have to do this once a month, I think. We'll have a little little coffee and design chat.
Powwow sounds great
to
me.
Yeah, powwow sounds good. And then I'm extending the invitation to all of you to come on our TV show and be a part of the design process if you're interested.
100%.
Sure. Yes. Right. Yes.
Welcome back to the show, folks. It is still baby safety month, right, Dave?
It finishes today. September is as baby safety month.
Yeah, and we want to just kind of round that out with one of our guests here, Alan Covello. I believe that's how it's pronounced.
Coviello.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Very good. How about yourself?
Good. Did we say your last name right?
Coviello.
So you're the president and CEO of Tad Green, Inc., and it is September and National Baby Safety Month. And the goal for this month is to really educate new parents and caregivers on keeping infants safe and healthy throughout their first couple of years here. And what do you offer in terms of suggestions and products that folks should be focusing in on?
The key thing in cleaning, this has to do with cleaning, is to keep the chemicals that are used for cleaning really away from the baby. If you're using chemicals, don't use them by the baby. We have a product line that's called Baby Care by eCloth, and it uses water and a cloth to clean with. What's really interesting is the technology comes out of the Swedish hospitals in the early 90s. They wanted to get rid of chemicals for cleaning. And the founder of our company saw the vision that this could have a really important impact on moms and dads that are having babies and brought it to the marketplace about 20 years ago.
I'm actually holding one of these eCloth floor cleaners, and it's a nice looking piece of machinery here, man. I like it.
Well, it is. It when you use water in that mop, it will pick up over 99% of all the bacteria on the floor. The baby crawls on the floor. They motorize on that floor. Their hands are on the floor. They put their hands in their mouth. And the last thing you want is chemicals on that floor, the residue.
Yeah.
Which is and because it goes right into their bodies, and you know it's not safe.
Well, how about the fact that on the bottom of people's shoes, all the millions of germs and critters and things that are brought into the home, and baby then is rolling around in it and crawling and putting their hands in their mouth. So it's crucial that you have something like this.
It is, and the same thing with pets. Think about pets walking in from the outside, and same problem, bringing that, you know, the germs and the chemicals that are outside into the home, and same thing happens.
So with this mop, Alan, is this need no chemicals with this?
No chemicals, just water. You take the head of the mop, you put it underneath a faucet, you then squeeze it out like a jelly roll, so it's very, very just damp,
mm-hmm.
and put it on the floor, attach the head, the stick to it, and scrub away.
And so is it something in the fibers that you guys have patented to kill the germs and bacteria?
We don't kill germs. We actually remove them. We capture them. It's a removal process. It's not like a chemical that disinfects on the floor where the residue of the toxins reside, but rather we pick up the bacteria from the fibers. The water helps the process, and then you rinse off the head underneath the faucet in the sink, and bingo, bacteria gets washed away down the drain.
Oh, my gosh. I love this.
Very simple.
My daughter's two now, and she's still putting fingers in her mouth, and she's running all over the place. I mean, this is something that I could use at our house, even at 2 years old.
Absolutely, Frank. And we have a cloth for toys. So
I'm holding that now. I kind of want to take a nap on it. It's really soft.
It is. It is. And it's dense. It's the fibers are made with high-quality raw materials. The 1/200th diameter human hair. There's 3.1 million fibers per square inch in the fabric. Normally, cleaning cloths will run about 50,000 fibers per square inch. So this is a very, very high-quality cleaning process.
How often, Alan, should you be cleaning the kids' toys? Because that's like one of my pet peeves is, like, you know, the friends come over, the cousins come over, they're all slobbering and touching them and putting them in their mouth. What's the recommendation to clean with this product?
If you have other people than your babe, you know, your child or baby playing with your toys, when someone leaves, you should clean them right away. Really should not have that saliva and, you know, all the other things that people bring into the house hanging on to the toy. And so it's an easy process with an e-cloth. It's water, the cloth, you wipe it, you're done, and the toy can be used right away. And Frank, with your two-year-old, you know, toys are getting more complex. There's
Yes.
more crevices, there's more pieces to them, and these are places where the bacteria just love to live.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to make sure you clean them out. And I have a friend, Amy. She takes the toys when friends come over, and she puts them in bleach. It's probably one of the worst things you can do.
My sister-in-law fills up the tub after everyone leaves and puts it half bleach, half water, and throws all the toys in there. So you're saying that's not a good thing?
Not a good thing. Bleach has major toxic components to it. And just the vapor from bleach has toxicity in it that hurts the lungs of children, of babies, and it's well documented in the medical community that chlorine bleach is a major cause of lung problems today.
Wow, that's great information. Now you guys also have this chemical-free and reusable hand and face cleaning kit. My wife would eat this stuff up.
That's an interesting product. And the evolution of that is that when we learned that wipes, you know, the typical wipes, do you still use wipes with your child at all?
We have a stock in the wipe company. Like we have them everywhere in our house. We go through them like crazy.
Well, unfortunately, you're not the only one. And you know, the stats are there about 38 billion children wipes are sold a year. 38 billion.
Wow.
I mean, it's a staggering number. And those wipes have a chemical in it called MI. And it was a doctor in Australia, of all places, that was able to trace back this chemical that's in almost every wipe that causes basically allergic contact dermatitis in babies and children. And it's also a leading cause of cancer. So it's one of those things where we saw the problem and we took our technology and with our cloth wipes and water, that's all you need. You can clean those messy hands, you can clean that messy face, and you don't have to worry about the child being hurt by the wipe.
That's interesting because, you know, with that dermatitis, I've noticed at times where I've, like, wiped my face with it real quick for whatever reason or wiped around my mouth, I'll get, like, a little bit of redness.
Yes.
And my daughter, the same thing. So, you know, that's interesting. I just need more of these. Maybe about 10,000 more of these cloths. If you could send those over, that would be great. And these are rewashable?
Rewashable. On that particular cloth, there's a 100-wash guarantee. It comes with a 10 to a pouch. A kit. It has a laundry bag in another pocket, so as it gets dirty, you just throw it in the laundry bag. You get home, you take it out, you throw in the washing machine, and start all over.
Boom. Alan, this is some great information. People, you go to ecloth.com/babycare, and you can find out more information about all these products there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank
everything
you.
That we sell.
I'm so excited because right now in the studio, we have our own little parade going on. It's about 100 people in here, and we got sausage, we got potato pancakes, we got Teddy, who's the president of Chicagoland Czech American Community Center, and Teddy's here to talk about Hopi Day.
Yes. Thank you very much, first of all, from the bottom of my heart, to invite us here to talk about Hopi Day.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm a fan, man. Tell me about this.
Well, Hopi Day was started in Berwyn and Cicero about 1968. And the reason was to promote the businesses on Cermak. And as you know, Anton Cermak was a Democratic.
I don't know, so please educate me. This is fascinating. I'm new to Chicago, like years new, but I don't know all the backstories of every nook and cranny.
Well, Anton Cermak was the gentleman that took on Big Bill Thompson and literally gave the voice back to the people. And when he won office, unfortunately, he was shot when he was next to Theodore Roosevelt in Florida in a motorcade.
Wow.
Yeah. But they named the street Cermak after him, 22nd Street, from Chicago all the way out to the suburbs. And so in 1968, the Business Association in Berwyn and Cicero, during this time in October, is usually mushroom picking time. And the Bohemians, the Czechs, and the Slovaks were really big and picking mushrooms. And so they try to...
And we're not talking about the psychedelic kind.
No, not that. But so they formed a way to promote the businesses they had. They started with the parade. It also had a 5K run at one time. And with this, as they were promoting the businesses, thousands of people came out. And as I said, this is going to be the 48th.
What does Hobie stand for?
Hobie stands for mushroom.
It does.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's you know, a few years ago, I've been a part of Berwyn Main Street delegate or Berwyn Main Street board of director. And we had Czech Oasis. But when Czech Oasis kind of went to the wayside, the CCACC, where I'm the president at, we kind of picked up the ball and said, you know what, we'll hold on to the tradition. And so we had a small but humble tent in front of our center, and this is our third year doing this. We have a polka band that will be there. It's a wonderful community event. You know, there's events going from Cicero all the way into Berwyn.
They used to have a big one in Bridgeport. Do they still have that?
You know what? I don't know. I really can't put a finger on that one. But as far as the Bohemian Wall Street, which was named, you know, nicknamed for Cermak, it's holding on to the tradition and promoting the business on Cermak.
Yeah, and how is the culture sustained here in Chicago?
Well, you have a lot of Czechs that are in and around Chicagoland, and there's a lot of famous Czechs that have done a lot of things. You know, Ray Kroc, the gentleman that with McDonald's, Eugene Cernan, the last man on the moon, Lovell, another Apollo.
Yeah,
you know. So there's a lot of famous Czechs that have contributed to, and Anton Cermak, the former mayor of Chicago. So it's very I'm just trying to promote the Czech American culture and the history of what they have done, and I also promote the businesses.
You brought some food here, which is fascinating. Where is this from?
The food is actually from Rose's Catering, Rose Lepetel. She did a wonderful job. She'll be cooking with us under our tent. We have potato pancakes here. We have Czech sausage.
Let's talk about it. We have a slightly larger, fatter sausage, and then a more lean one. I'd love to taste one. Dave, do we have some utensils around, or are we just going to use our fingers?
We're going to have to be creative like in the old days. At this point, I went
just
to
grab
run.
Them. Just go, ladies, God, don't be shy. Yeah. Just go ahead and get your fingers in there.
There's some disposable napkins right
we got
there.
Some, yeah, use a napkin, and we could do a little sampling over here. The potato pancakes was the first thing I tried, and that's a staple of your culture, right?
Yeah, potato pancakes are also known as brambaraki, which is everybody knows a potato pancake. Here in the States, everyone puts like applesauce or sour cream on there, you know. In the old country, it's more, you know, you just eat it with, and then you have a good glass of beer with it. But also accompanying the potato pancakes, you have the German sausage, or the
which
Czech
is the
sausage,
larger,
which is the fatter one, which is the garlic sausage.
If you were to recommend which sausage I should try,
I would go with my personal would be the fatter one.
The fatter one. All right, I'm taking your lead.
You have
on this.
Everything there is gluten free. It's wonderful, and you have also sauerkraut there, which is also known as zelly.
Oh gosh!
And then, if anybody is that would like to, we also have strudel here, so apple strudel. So
everybody... we're getting to that, Ted. Trust me, we're going to get to that. I'm polishing off some beer, some Czech beer, which is fantastic. We're going to be talking to Matt in just a little bit here, and Pat about some of the alcohols. I got a question for you, architecturally speaking, just to shift gears a little bit. Doing some research about your motherland, your country, and the type of homes and interiors they design with and build with. And one thing that resonated was these high peaks on all of the A-frame types of housing. Do you know why that is?
I would imagine just from I'm not an engineer, but I would imagine it's because of the amount of snowfall that would come through there. The homes there are built to last decades. And so the bricks are a lot larger than the bricks that we use here. So the peaks of the roof are pretty much at that angle to hold disperse the amount of weight that comes down on it, especially when it's snow time.
So it's functional. What we're talking about is really the design is driven by function here, which is fascinating. And girls from the school here are designers. Have you seen some of these photos? So what do you think? I mean, in terms of the architecture of the Czech design here, I'm digging it. It's really funky.
Yeah, actually reminiscent of being here in Chicago as a Mies van der Rohe. Lots of clean lines, lots of glass. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it borders on a little bit of a Swedish or Danish modern type of look into the design. And you know, the materials used, I'm seeing a lot of wood, but you're mentioning brick as a heavy element.
Correct.
Yeah.
It all depends on what region you're in. You know, a lot of the, you know, if you go to, you know, a chata, which is like a cottage. So it all depends on if they're, you know, next to a forest or whatever it means that they had. I mean, but they also use very heavy timber. I have family and friends that some of their homes are like 150 years old.
Wow.
You know, but
have you guys brought a lot of that style to Chicago?
You could honestly see it in the old Pilsen neighborhood.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Pilsen, Lawndale, and you could see it in Berwyn and Cicero also. There's also a famous restaurant in Cicero named Klaus that had, you know, a lot of the Czech style architecture designed into it. You know, Czech Republic, including Prague. Has anybody ever been to Prague here?
No.
Well, I got to tell you,
on the bucket list.
It's absolutely beautiful. I would recommend anybody to go there and travel. The Charles Bridge is the oldest stone bridge in the world. It's absolutely magnificent. The nighttime there, people are wonderful. And then you have a bunch of cathedrals and the castles. I highly recommend anybody to go there. And people, English is frequently used over there, so it's it's very affordable. For a capital city.
Interesting. And the Hobie, you know, like I go back to this mushroom. How is it integrated into, you know, is it a food element? Is it a iconic symbol?
Well, we hold on. As I stated, when they first started this, this was in 68, you know, mushroom was, you know, this was a time for mushrooms. You know, people would go out into the forest, and you would never know where anybody would go because it was always a big hidden secret. No one ever would ever tell you where they would. It's just like a fishing hole.
Right. Oh, was there a specific mushroom of choice? Or?
Oh, brother, don't ask me on that one. The big joke.
You're going to die with that one? I know it, but I can't tell
you. No, the big joke is that you could always eat, you could eat every mushroom, but some of them only just once because some of them are deadly.
So it was a trial and experiment kind of thing, yeah, right? If you didn't come back from the woods, we know that you ate
the
wrong mushroom.
Yeah, you had the wrong one. But some of these guys, one of my fond memories is a gentleman, Fred Gala, he's no longer with us. He was a great gentleman, and he would always come back, and I would go to one of the fraternal organizations I belonged to, which was Sokol, S-O-K-O-L, and he would have, I'm talking, a mushroom the size of your computer screen. I'm like, where would you get these? And he's like, never going to tell. They would never tell. It was a very well-hidden secret.
And here in America, and even in Asian culture, it's been used for medical purposes as well. Is that similar in the Czech?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Czechs are very big on natural medicine also. And they, you know, they believe in, you know, trying to, well, this is not very healthy food. It's very thick.
What do you mean this is not a healthy sausage I'm eating right now? You're bursting my bubble here.
But, you know, they always wash everything down with either a great glass of wine or beer. Everybody, I don't know if anybody knows this, but the Czech Republic is known. They're the largest beer drinking nation in the world.
Really?
Per capita.
I thought Chicago was. It's amazing.
Yeah. So it's, you know, like I said, Czech Republic has a really rich history, and I'm very proud to be a Czech American and help promote its culture. And
we're happy to have you here. Everybody should come check out Hobie Day. And why don't you give the information out one more time for folks to come on down?
Well, it's this coming up October 2nd. The parade starts at noon. It ends about 2 o'clock. But our tent will be open. We'll have a polka band there starting at 2 o'clock, going until about 5. We will have an array of food that you guys see here.
Yeah, if it's anything like what's here, it's fascinating. It's delicious food. You got to go check it out.
Well, thank you. As long as the weather holds up, no matter what the weather is, everyone's drinking. Or
yeah, I was going to say, there's plenty of alcohol to drown it out. You won't be worried about rain.
The music is going to be playing. Like I said, it's a good family event, and to include it, you know, Berwyn and Cicero has a very diverse community. And everybody's embraced the Hobie Day, and there's a very large Latino Hispanic part of the parade that they march with their organizations, and so it's a truly international parade, and it's one of the oldest parades in Chicagoland district.
Excellent, and we're going to learn more about all of the fine beverages.
Tied up with strings.
So where's everybody?
Yeah. All right. We're back in studio for the home stretch here. Right now, we're getting our drink and eat on as we're talking about Hobie Day and some of the beverages you'll be able to try at Hobie Day are being represented right now in studio. We have Paul O'Reilly. He's from USB Beverage or US Beverage and from Czech Wine Imports, Matthew Kremsky. Guys, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Thanks, Frank. And yourself?
Oh, man, I'm doing well. Thank you. Doing even better that you guys showed up. I got food in my belly and drink in my hand. So
life is good.
That's good. Life is good. And we just had this off-mic debate whether Ted is right here, Paul. Is do Czechs drink more beer than Irish?
I think that's very questionable myself, but where that fact came from. But,
let's debate it. Let's talk about it. Because wine could be split right in the middle, right, Matt? I mean, everybody drinks wine.
Well, actually, the wine-drinking region in the Czech Republic is Moravia. Bohemia is the huge beer region, and Moravia, the other sub-region, they drink more wine than beer, usually.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So I'm sampling a beer right now. Let's start on beer. It's Czechsivar, is that what it's called?
That's right, Czechvar.
Czechvar.
From Czech Budovice, the brewery. It's just outside Prague, about an hour. And it's the original, it's Budvar. It's known in Europe, but in the name Budweiser goes back to the 1895 when the brewery started. But there was Germans and the Czechs themselves, and the name became to the States as Budweiser and Budvar. But it's known as Czechvar in the States, Brazil, and Canada. Whereas Budweiser's had a case against them, so they had to change the name to Czechvar.
So would this be considered the Budweiser of the Czech Republic?
Correct. Yeah, it's known as Budvar, actually. In Europe, it would be Budvar. So you wouldn't see Czechvar in Europe. You only see the brand name Czechvar in North America.
It's the original Budvar.
Yeah, I got to say, it's a little bit better than, it's a lot better than Budweiser.
Yeah, well, it's about 5%. There's a lovely taste to it, little sweet taste to it, nice hop aroma. Yeah,
I do like it.
Lovely, nice.
Hey, Dave, would you pour me a glass of wine while you're over there? I'd love to try some.
So the Saaz hops that are used are the premier hops used by brewmasters everywhere. It's the favorite hops used in a lot of beers, classic to the standard Pilsner. So
what I'm going to switch gears here to have a little sampling of the wine. What am I looking at here, Matt?
Well, we have several wines that come in through Czech Wine Imports under the umbrella of Vinos Czech, which means wine from Czech. We have a professional sommelier who goes to the sub-regions, five of them in Moravia along the Austrian border on the 39th parallel, which is the same as Champagne. And they bring in lots of wines.
That's what I'm drinking here?
You are drinking Ravaner, otherwise known as Müller Thurgau.
It's different.
So, yeah, it's it is 9.6% of the total growing varietals in the region. The other ones are Grüner Veltliner, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Gewürztraminer, Saint Laurent, which is a wild relative of Pinot Noir, Blaufränkisch, Zweigelt.
Yeah, I'm a Pinot Noir fan if I'm going to do some wine.
Yeah, and we have Pinot Noir as well.
So, our bartender just left, so we'll have to figure this out when he comes back.
Well, our sommelier has got a good sense of humor. Says that Saint Laurent is Pinot Noir's kinky cousin.
That's what happens on this last 15 minutes of the show. Things get kinky.
If you don't have a kinky cousin, that means that you're the kinky cousin.
So. Right. I like that. So how important is for Hopi Day to have the alcoholic beverage element to it being the number one beer consuming, culture in the world?
To my friend Paul.
Google
and your iPhones. But under the BBC study, the Czech Republic consumes more beer per capita than any other country in the world.
Ooh, Paul.
So,
well, what's it? I was just thinking myself. We didn't include whiskey there. Which
yes, this could change everything.
So if we had whiskey beer, then we're. Okay.
I think we should just have a throwdown right there. Let's line it up: Ted versus Paul, right here. We'll do shots and we'll see how far this can go. Whoever passes out first loses. That's how it goes down. And we got Mark Carman joining the party. What's up, Mark? What's going on?
You guys are the best.
Yeah, we're leaving it for you just like this. All right. So we're here promoting Hobie Day and all of the beverages and food that you'll find at Hobie Day. It's something you should definitely go out and check. If you could hear, we're having a little party here in the studio. And we're getting wine bottles are popping, Mark. You came in at the right time. You know what's ironic, Mark, is you never come in this early. All of a sudden, you're here. What's this all about? I mean, I like you and all, but I think you like food and beverage better.
I just walked into the lower level of the studio, and I was encouraged to walk in here.
You were, yeah.
So
was it the smell of sausage and sauerkraut that lured you in?
I think it was just really just to be able to hang with you for a minute here
and
see what's going on in this wild scene. I mean, we've got wine, we got beer,
and
we've got
women,
lots of them. Yep. All very, very attractive. This is great. So thank you. If you want to stay till 6 and just hang out, we can continue the party.
I can facilitate the alcoholic beverages and the food for you, but I don't know if I could personally.
Well, you got a white wine, or maybe just you have a red wine and a beer. I can't. My color is obviously challenged right now, apparently.
Wait, here. So the red is the Pinot Noir,
That's correct. And that wine is made by
Mark, help yourself, please.
Templar Winery, which has made wine since 1249. It's actually made by the Knights of Templar.
Wow. That's fantastic. That really is really good.
It's very reminiscent of the classic old world Pinot Noirs. The modern ones that come out of Washington, Oregon, are kind of one note, very fruit forward. It's got a lot more complexity to it.
Yeah, it's spectacular. All great stuff. And then Teddy, you're running for a high level office position for mayor, aren't you?
Oh yeah. Right now, I'm currently an alderman. Correct.
Okay.
And in the city of Berwyn, I just threw my head in to run for mayor.
Well, come on, folks. We got to support Teddy here. Teddy for mayor. I love this.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm putting my vote in right now. See, he's got it
free
right.
Free beer for everyone.
Exactly.
Free beer and free wine. And don't forget the wine. And don't forget the potato pancakes.
And so. The potato pancakes. And we do have one text coming in over our text line. The question, the big resounding question this listener wants to know is, do you all drink rakia?
Rakia.
Rakia. Do we know what that is? R-A-K-I-A. That's Ukrainian.
Yes.
Well, the Czechs, as far as spirits go,
says our Spanish gal in the room.
As far as spirits go, the Czechs drink a hard liqueur or a liquor that's known as slivets. They're also big drinkers of bekarovka, which is a herbal medicine, herbal drink that is used for many uses. Either if you have an upset stomach to help with the digestive, it's imperative, and
it gives you a buzz at the same time.
And if you really just want to make a couple good drinks, you could just use it for a drink also. But the main drinks that they drink are like a fernet, bekarovka, or slivovitz. But as far as you know, when you pair up the food and the drinks, the Czechs like to celebrate life, and they have a very hard work ethic. And at the same time, when it's time to sit back, relax with their family, there's nothing better than to open up a Czech bar or a glass of wine and or slivovitz, and then have food. And when you go, even here in the States, when you go to someone's house, it's the very first thing that you sit down. Someone's running around preparing a plate. There's putting food out, and you're just sitting down and just drinking, and you're either talking about politics or the community or what else is going on. So
nothing better than that, folks. Mm. Nothing better than that. I want to thank all my guests today, and Teddy, thank you so much for coming, and Theodore Polishek, good luck with the election.
Thank you very much.
Paul O'Reilly, thank you so much for the beer, and I'm with you, man. I don't know if I believe 100% of what Teddy's saying about this beer thing.
I'm with you, Frank.